The Guardian.
Hello and welcome to the Guardian Football Weekly Extra. Is the Carabao Cup the best competition in the world? Liverpool edge out Arsenal on penalties after a 5-all draw. Stunning goals, some excellent Ozil and no VAR to wait for. Marcus Rashford hits the ball right on the valve of the lighter mitre as Manchester United win at Chelsea. Everton managed to win a game while Oxford and Colchester are the lower league representatives. There's a full fit bar to round up, 5 each for Real and Barca, while there's a 96th minute winner for Ronaldo in Italy. We'll look ahead to the Premier League this weekend, answer your questions. And that's today's Guardian Football Weekly Extra. On the panel today, fresh from an evening at the Science Museum, Barry Glendenning.
Hello.
How are you?
I'm feeling very scientific.
Yeah. You look like a scientist. You've put glasses on.
Yes, I'm wearing a lab coat and I've got a clipboard and a pen in front of me.
And you have a test tube above a Bunsen burner, yes, just bubbling away to see the results. John Bruin, hey.
Hiya.
It's been a while.
It has been a while.
Well, it's lovely to see you.
It's lovely to see you.
I like you, John.
Thanks.
That's okay. I'm Marcus Bean.
How you doing?
I also like you.
That's good to know.
Wouldn't want you to feel left out. Are you well?
I'm very good, thank you.
Shall we start at Anfield then? Liverpool 5, Arsenal 5. Liverpool win 5-4. On penalties, it's not often that the number of goals scored in 90 minutes is higher than the number of penalties scored in the shootout. Lovely goal from Oxlade-Chamberlain. Joe Willock got a great goal for Arsenal. Origi scored a decent one. My favourite moment, Marcus, was Mesut Ozil's assist for Ainsley Maitland-Niles. Are you with me, or did you prefer... you're a Liverpool fan, you probably preferred some other moments, but that was a beautiful piece of football.
It was. We all know Ozil's capable of moments like that, and it was a great vision and skill, and that's what he's putting the team to do, is create assists like that.
Barry, are you with me?
I am. I mean, because I was gadding about in the Science Museum, I've only seen highlights of this game, but it, from what I've seen and what I've heard, Ozil seems to have played himself into contention for a start in the league, and it'll be interesting to see if he gets one.
Yeah, the first time he's been on the pitch since the last round of the League Cup, actually. Would you bring him in from the cold, John?
Well, Emery said, didn't he, that he's probably going to be involved against Wolves at the weekend. And I'm going to turn to Mesut's words himself.
Because, oh, they're so good, aren't they?
Because, I don't know if you noticed this, but I've developed a real love for footballers' post-match tweets. And
this is peak, isn't it?
Listen to this. Crazy, an incredible match, and then that sort of hand over face emoji thing. Losing on penalties is always tough, but definitely some positive things to take away from Anfield Road tonight. Thanks for the away support, the clasp hands thing. Is that a clap?
I think it's a sort of praise be type.
Okay. Praise. Yeah. Heart. Focus on Wolverhampton now. And then hashtag M10 with an umlaut over the... Yeah, very good. Hashtag COYG, hashtag Yar Gunners Yar at Arsenal. Now, that's what we get these days, and that's what sums it up for me.
Marcus, did you ever get told by a, you know, Wickham's social media man to send out a away support was great, we go again, gutted to lose at Peterborough, we go again?
Yeah, that's like the standard footballer spiel, isn't it? No, to be honest, the media guys don't really force any of the players to write anything, so that's probably definitely come from him.
It's not can't him, be him.
Well, say him or his media team, his personal media team, if that makes sense, rather than the club. I don't think the club are controlling his personal Twitter.
No, because he's done a couple of fairly pertinent tweets, hasn't he? The one with a sort of wink and then there was
one where he was laughing.
There's one where he's laughing recently. Those social media accounts, I was told, two relatively notorious ones. I think it's Batshuayi and Benjamin Mendy were both done by the same person.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
So you're not getting the person?
No.
No.
There's specific companies that manage multiple players out there. Yeah.
And
I'm quite disappointed to learn that Benjamin Mendy doesn't do his own Twitter, because it's quite good.
Well, I think maybe there's an interaction perhaps via WhatsApp, and then that is condensed by social media into the hot content that you've become so enamoured with, Barry.
Does Bernardo Silva do his own? Does he have a set of people?
Oh, no.
See, he does now.
Anyway, look, back to the game. You know, Liverpool had a 16-year-old, a 17-year-old, two 18-year-olds, a 19 and a 20-year-old. Arsenal had two 18-year-olds, a 19-year-old and a 20-year-old as well. They played a lot of...
Are they all copying Frank Lampard?
maybe they are. It's nice to... I don't know, there was just something really fresh about this game, Marcus.
Yeah, that's one of the, I'll say, positives out of the Carabao Cup is that you get to see some of the emerging talent. And I agree with you, it was good to see so much attacking talent on the pitch, young talent. And to be honest, they produced, didn't they? It was 5-5 and there were some extremely good goals in that.
No Xhaka in the squad, so the armband was passed to third captain Hector Bellerin. Mesut Ozil is actually the fifth captain, which, as producer Jonathan writes, feels a bit deputy to the regional manager type captain, doesn't he? John Broomfield writes, was Liverpool-Arsenal only 5-5 because there's no VAR? And if so, is it the only legitimate reason to watch the Carabao Cup? There was a real freedom in the fact that VAR wasn't there and players celebrated when they scored.
Yeah, that idea of being able to celebrate without that slight delay. I agree with Marcus, actually. The Carabao Cup, I think the joy of that competition is seeing those younger players. It gets a bit more serious when it goes to those two-legged semi-finals and then the final. And I suppose it's like the FA Cup, which is, I think, these days for the lower league and non-league teams. That's what both those competitions, I suppose, have lost luster since the Champions League got so big. So the Carabao Cup, I always think it's good midweek viewing. Mm. I would miss it, and some people want rid of it, but not for me.
The penalties were all, well, nine of them were very good penalties, including Curtis Jones. Just what a brilliant moment, Barry, to score a winning penalty in front of the cop as a teenager. That's
yeah. I heard an interview he did after the game, and he sounded terrified, you know, not by the game, but just by the prospect of having to conduct an interview. He possibly has never done one before. But yeah, he was chuffed to bits, and Queevy and Kelleher, the goalkeeper as well, to save one in front of the cop. That must be a very proud moment for him, and one he'll never forget.
And apparently, Origi was down to take that penalty, and Jones either asked Origi whether he could take it or just said, I'm going to take this, which seems slightly strange in terms of what it says about, you know, I've heard people, you know, in a positive way saying it just shows the confidence of the lad Jones. I don't know what it says about Origi. Maybe he just doesn't really mind. He's just quite relaxed. Or Jurgen Klopp's control over the situation. Or maybe I'm reading a lot into something that actually doesn't matter.
Wasn't the word that... It's Curtis Jones, isn't it? He wasn't happy that he wasn't playing in the game because he played well against MK Dons and felt he had something to prove. And maybe this was the way of him showing it to Klopp. I'm not sure that that's a long-term strategy.
I think when it comes to penalties, I think you should, as a player, if someone steps up and says, I want this and I'm confident, I think it's always the right thing to do is to pass it on to them. So I think...
especially if you're not confident.
Exactly, especially if you're not confident. So I think Rigi is obviously, one, probably thinking, this is a young boy, it's a good moment, great moment for him, it could build his career, which is admirable. And two, he's thinking, okay, maybe I'm not as confident as him. He seems confident, let him go ahead and do it.
Jurgen Klopp has threatened to withdraw Liverpool from the Carabao Cup should the EFL and the Premier League fail to find what he considers a proper date for their quarter-final. The issue being their game with Aston Villa will be on the 17th or 18th of December. Now, they have a game on the 18th of December in Qatar, Barry, in the World Club Cup. Difficult to play both games on the same day. I mean, not impossible, I guess, if they bring in a lot of young players.
It would be, I presume, doable. I was looking at their lineup, starting 11 last night, to see how many of those players are likely to be in the squad for the World Club Championship. And, you know, you'd imagine Gomez would, Milner, Keita, Ox, Lallana probably, and Origi, so yeah, quite a few. But it would be unfair, of course, to expect them to, to field two teams on the same day in two different competitions, although it would be quite interesting.
Well, Warren says, just an idea for the Liverpool fixture congestion. They're playing Villa away this weekend in the league. Anyway, why not just double up that fixture? 3 points and a semi-final place at stake. Or you can do, at my level, you have double headers when there's loads of games called off. You have 2-hour-long games, 3 points each, half hour each way. Then you get 10 minutes off. Half hour each way. But look, Liverpool do have games on December the 4th, 7th, 10th, 14th, two on the 18th, 21st in Qatar as well, 26th, 29th, then the 2nd of January, 4th of January, 7th of January. It's a lot of football matches, John.
It is. What I don't quite understand is how we've got into this situation, because this is not the first time that English teams have been in this situation. Manchester United won the Champions League in 2008, and they actually won the whatever the Worthington Cup or whatever it was called back then that season, played in that World Club Championship, and that fixture was fulfilled. I'm almost certain that Alex Ferguson whinged about players being tired, and then Chelsea were the same in 2012, and they themselves got to a semi-final in the League Cup. So I'm not sure how this fixture congestion has come about. The only thought is that there is this sort of winter breaky thing in January, isn't there, where they're sort of swapping over and teams take a week off and stuff like that, and that's congested the fixtures before Christmas. But Jurgen Klopp's reaction to it, underneath it all, he likes a bit of a whinge, doesn't he? And he was quite sort of petulant about this.
Do you think? I mean, I think he appears, maybe he's, I've been conned by his smile, but he seems one of the lesser whingier managers. I mean, there are managers that whinge more than him.
I recall that when he was at Dortmund and he became a, you know, world famous manager, that those in Germany were saying that, you know, the wild and crazy guy that you see has a side to him as well. And when he loses his temper and when he has a complaint, there is that edge to him, and there is that edge to, I suppose, all great football managers. Mm. There has to be.
It's interesting. The World Club Cup itself is not something that we take particularly seriously here. I think they do take it very seriously in South America. Yeah. I'm not sure how they... I think other European countries take it more serious than we do. I mean, there's a possibility that we just haven't got this right and we need to... Because in essence, it's quite a nice idea for a competition. If the year had like 400 days in it and there was enough time, then I'd quite like the idea of this competition.
Yeah, I mean, it's certainly worth winning. But Liverpool are a hugely resourced football club. I get a bit tired of managers moaning about their teams having to play football. Just play it. They will find a window to play this quarterfinal against Villa, and it will be all right.
Yeah, when I heard the complaints about this, I did think, oh, great, another fixture list congestion story. It does seem to happen. And actually, what you say about that competition, Liverpool played in its predecessor in 81 against Flamengo and got completely destroyed by a team, including Zico. And their thing was always like, I think it was played in Japan, and their thing was always, oh, we just went over and like had a drink and didn't really care. But I think you're right about other European teams. I once spoke to Edwin van der Sar, and he was saying that his greatest moment in football was winning that competition in 1996. So why is our attitude so different to it?
Yeah.
And if Klopp has said, which I think he has, he might withdraw them from the League Cup, then... just field a reserve team, send your reserves and your reserve manager to fulfil that fixture. They might win.
What about a Liverpool legends side? That would be fun.
Funny enough, he put his reserve manager up for the press conference before this game, didn't he?
On congestion, actually, it's the fans in a way. Like, a game every 3 days. I mean, if you were a diehard football fan, you go to every game. That is financially sort of crippling. But it's almost like, and I can't see it's ever going to change. There's only going to ever be more of it. But that, it's almost like there's so much football that eventually you have to go, hang on a second, that's, how much can I handle, right?
Yeah, I agree. I think for the fans, and who travel home and away, it's a burden and it's difficult for them. And I actually feel most sorry for them. I think if you look at the top players around the world, they want to play in every game and they want to score goals in every game. The Ronaldos, the Messi, they just see an opportunity to boost their numbers. And that's the mentality I think the players should have. And that should really seep down to the managers as well. Managers have just got to accept it. That's what you're paid to do. It's not ideal, but get on with it, in my opinion.
I mean, for the player liaison officer and whoever does the admin, that's quite, you know, organising the hotels and the travel must be quite a bind for whoever does that behind the scenes at Liverpool.
They're not exactly on a budget, though, are they?
No, that's
true. It's not like they're sort of at the bottom of booking.com and going price.
Qatar price on a shoestring.
Low to high first.
Anyway, well done to Liverpool. And listen, the positives to take for Arsenal after what's been a pretty difficult few days for them. To Stamford Bridge, Chelsea 1, Manchester United 2. Marcus Rashford, in his post-match TV interview, talking about how it was good to get the 3 points ahead of his birthday, which is today. Happy birthday, Marcus. That free kick.
Did he really say that about the 3 points? Yeah.
there's a proud Manchester United tradition. I think Ryan Giggs said that after a Champions League match and knockout one. So
the free kick, Marcus, it's just ridiculous, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was some strike. Obviously moved a lot, but from that distance, it was an incredible strike. I'm just, well, I don't know with keepers whether Wall is a bit of a hindrance from that distance. Mm. I think as a keeper, I would be disappointed if I didn't save that, to be honest.
Rashford, very humbly, couldn't praise one of his teammates, so decided to praise the football. He just said, to be honest, it was the balls. When we were training with them and we were shooting, there was this up and down motion. They can go anywhere. Thankfully, today it went in the top corner. So it should be in the papers. It should say ball 73.
Yeah, I think he's being a tad too humble there, because I imagine I could have taken that free kick and it wouldn't have reached the goal, let alone gone in.
It's like a par four for you, that, wasn't it? Martin Tyler was talking a lot about kicking the ball on the valve to make a difference. Scanning the room, Marcus, I would come to you for this question. Have you ever placed a ball to strike it on the valve for
I was not capable of anything like that. I would have done my medial ligament the way he kicks a ball like that, to be honest. But I do see some people that do take free kicks maneuver the ball, so they are trying to hit it on the valve.
Yeah.
Do you think with Marcus Rashford, now he's done that once, do you think he's going to try that again and again in the style that Roberto Carlos scored the free kick that we all know against France.
Yeah, in Le Tournoi,
the England won gloriously.
We did.
And then spent the next, what feels like 25 years, taking the same free kick and it ending up in row Z of the Bernabeu.
Chris says, what's the most amount of penalties a team have had this season? Manchester United must be racing to the record. They seem to have had one every game. They've won 8 so far this season, scored 4. Looked quite soft to me for a penalty, but there was no VAR, so it doesn't matter. Right? It's just heavenly.
The referee's decision is final, and doesn't that feel so satisfying?
We've got to give Ole Gunnar Solskjaer some credit, because we definitely have given him some stick on this podcast, not just him, but you know the whole of Manchester United and how it's run. But since the Liverpool game, John, he's done it right.
Yeah, I think before that Liverpool game, the idea was United have got the Liverpool game plus X amount of away games, and that is going to be the test of Ole Gunnar Solskjaer, and that might be the end of Ole Gunnar Solskjaer. I suppose the one thing you would say is that they were able to play the Liverpool game as if it was an away game, playing the counter, which is very much the style that, it's about the only style that I can recognise in Solskjaer's United, and then they've played away games which suit them. And going back to Rashford, he, in that Liverpool game, played his best game since PSG back in the spring, and he is a confidence player, and his confidence is obviously very high at the moment. And I should say, he's not just a confidence player, he's an excellent player, and when his confidence is high, he becomes an even better player. And there was quite a lot of doubt about Rashford, you know, and there's a lot of United fans have been doubting him, saying he's not good enough to lead the line, regretting the fact that Romelu Lukaku has been sold. Now, obviously, he's played with Anthony Martial the last couple of games. I don't think you could ever doubt Rashford's talent. I just think that he struggled in a struggling team, and they're not struggling so much now.
Do you think the fans would be okay with Manchester United playing like that at Old Trafford against not Liverpool?
Well, I don't know if they'd be able to get away with it, because other teams will turn up because it's still Old Trafford and will play and sit deep, so that results in some of the fairly grim stuff that Manchester United have played this season. But that was an away game, but the Newcastle game 2 or 3 weeks ago, Steve Bruce essentially put his team sitting as far back as they could and then slowly inched up through the game and then stole the win because they were able to do that, because they knew that United can only really play on the counter.
Can you be, you know, could you have a sort of clash of stubbornness then? If you've got two sides who basically want to play counter-attack, neither of them really want to have the ball, and they both are staying deep. Eventually, one team has to have it at some point, right?
Yeah, I just don't... United, that's not an option for United at home against less opposition. They just wouldn't... One, the fans wouldn't allow it, and two, I don't think that it would be a successful tactic. The problem they have at the moment is that they're not quite good enough technically to dominate possession, which means against the smaller teams on a low block, they struggle massively. And I agree with what you said, is that... they look good on the counter, but that's only an acceptable choice against big opposition.
Manchester City beat Southampton 3-1. Barry, you know, the first reaction from this is, it's quite a good result for Southampton.
It certainly is. At our event last night, Laura Bowen, who's a data scientist at Southampton, she did a bit with us, and... She was a little nervous because clearly there's a very large elephant in the room with the 9-0 from the weekend. And Laura's job is obviously at training. She's in charge of crunching all the numbers and the data from the GPS and the heart monitors. So it was all her fault that they got beaten 9-0. But I think it was a pretty comfortable victory for Manchester City, and... I would say Southampton were just quite relieved that they... I reckon if you'd offered them 3-1 defeat before the game, they'd have snapped your hand off just to try and put the other one behind them.
In this game, I noticed a Tommy Doyle playing. Did you see this?
Yeah, 18-year-old Tommy Doyle.
Manchester City royalty. His paternal grandfather was Mike Doyle, City captain of the 70s, and his maternal... grandfather was Glyn Pardo. Both of those played in the 68 City title-winning team. Glyn Pardo's career was ended by tackle by George Best. And I know this actually because a lad at school lived next door to Mike Doyle, and their other neighbour was William Roach, Ken Barlow.
Really?
Yes.
What a star-studded house, terraced street they were on.
But it doesn't stop there.
Oh.
Yeah. Glyn Pardo's cousin is Alan Oakes.
Right.
And Alan Oakes holds the all-time City appearance record. And now you might remember Alan Oakes's son, Michael Oakes, the goalkeeper.
Yes.
From Aston Villa and Wolves. So that's a real football dynasty there, isn't it?
But it doesn't stop there.
I'm afraid it doesn't. Oh.
Scott Carson made the bench for the second time at Manchester City so far. The loneliness of a third-choice goalkeeper. Manchester City have played 15 this season, won 12, drawn 1, lost 2. The only games they haven't won have been in the Premier League. Matt Law in The Telegraph. Manchester City's cup draws since 2018-2019. Champions League, Lyon, Hoffenheim, Shakhtar twice, Schalke, Spurs, Dinamo Zagreb, Atalanta. In the FA Cup since 2018-2019, Rotherham, Burnley, Newport, Swansea, Brighton, Watford. In the League Cup, Oxford, Fulham, Leicester, Burton, Chelsea, Preston North End, Southampton, and they've been drawn against Oxford in this. That is a staggering run of easy football matches, isn't it?
Warming of balls.
I mean, it's amazing, really. But, you know, they're all in the hat, I guess, and they all get drawn out. That'll do for part one. Part two, we'll round up the rest of the Carabao Cup. Welcome to part two of the Guardian Football Weekly Extra. Live shows, Barry. 27th of November, Christmas special, Indigo at the O2. Me, you, Jonathan Wilson, Ellis James. We've even had a production meeting, haven't we?
We had, at which Ellis James arrived Well, he claims 15 minutes late. I'm going near 25.
Yeah.
After first turning up to the wrong venue, mm-hmm. And then drinking coffee out of, I can't remember the technical term, but it was one of those
conical flask?
Conical science flasks.
To be fair, he didn't specify he wanted it.
Oh, no, it arrived.
Yeah,
And we thrashed out some ideas, which if they come to fruition, I suspect it would be a very good show. So please come along, everyone.
Musical numbers, celebrity cameos, all of that kind of thing. 20th of December, me, Lars Wilson and one more are doing the Belgrave Music Hall in Leeds. And 27th is sold out in Dublin, but we're doing the 28th as well at Liberty Hall, me, Barry and a couple of others. Everton 2, Watford 0, both clubs in crisis this season, the bottom five in the league. The Marco Silva Richarlison derby won by Everton. I heard someone yesterday saying the first half was an affront to football, but Everton got it together in the second half. And Marcus, they needed this win badly, didn't they?
They did, and the pressure's on Everton. A lot of money being spent and performances just haven't been good enough, so it was a big win for them.
Mason Holgate getting his first ever goal for Everton in his 53rd game. What do you make of the malaise at both of those sides, John?
If I may say this, I think I predicted that Watford would struggle this season, and I think they're going down. If they haven't won by this point in the season already, that spells doom for them. And it's odd considering how well it worked for them up until about February last year. With Everton, I was looking at the fixture list this weekend, and it's Everton-Tottenham on Sunday. And that, in days gone by, that would be a battle of to the biggest clubs in the country, a big five battle. And Tottenham are in that big five, the big six, and Everton aren't. And it's always Everton that are sort of left on the shelf, really, aren't they? And to my, 40-odd-year-old mind, they're a big club and remain so. But it just never quite happens for them, does it?
No, but they could win this.
What, the Carabao Cup?
Yeah.
They could.
But you kind of know
that
they
it's not going to happen. Yeah, that's just Everton. You know that they've got to finals. They got to the FA Cup final in 2009, last trophy in 1995. It's just been such a barren spell, and the new owner or the co-owner was expected to change things, and it's still just Everton.
Yeah. And you know, younger listeners will just not remember they were the best team in the country.
Absolutely,
in the 80s.
Yeah.
You know, they were absolutely brilliant football team, weren't they? Villa 2, Wolves 1. El Mohammedi getting the winner from a corner 3 minutes after a Patrick Cotroni equaliser. Villa had 20 shots to Wolves 7. Could have easily been a different result. Pedro Neto looked like he was fouled by two different defenders with Wolves 2-1 down. But there's no VAR, so doesn't matter. No one minds. It's all right. Do Villa go for this competition now, Baz?
Yeah. I mean, if you're in it at this point, in the last eight.
And they've got a bye as well.
You've got to go for it. They've got a bye because they'll either won't have to play a game, or they'll be playing, 11 randomers plucked off the streets of Liverpool. You have to go for it. Why wouldn't you?
Cotroni's second goal in a Wolves shirt in 17 appearances. Hasn't quite lived up to the hype he was given after he scored 18 in his first senior season with Milan. Still only 21, though. The goal set up by 18-year-old Englishman Taylor Perry. Wolves started a 16-year-old Welsh kid called Chem Campbell. Would you like to know what was number one on the day he was born?
Yeah.
Sound of the Underground by Girls Aloud.
Crikey.
Burton 1, Leicester City 3. Ian Acho, producer Jonathan, says he completely forgot he was at Leicester City. It happens with quite a few players, doesn't it? Just four goals in 37 appearances across this season and last. Burton did get it back to 2-1 with Liam Boyce, who just kicked it as hard as he could, and the keeper probably should have saved it. But then Leicester brought on some big guns, and James Maddison scored one in the 89th minute.
Has Ian Acho been injured, or is it just not working for him? Because, he was quite the prospect at City, really, and then he moved on. And
didn't he have that chance at City last season?
Yeah.
Where he side-footed it about 100 miles wide
And then cue Pep cam and Pep not looking too impressed.
Yeah.
And you thought that's probably it for him.
It must be harder if you're a centre forward who is, just because centre forwards are more high profile, like that when you move or when you make a mistake or when it's publicised, it's much bigger than if you're just a holding midfielder who doesn't quite cut it and then goes off somewhere else.
Yeah. And I don't think Kelechi really fitted the Pep Guardiola model, which is, you know, even Sergio Aguero, he wants to press hard and chase. And I don't think... I think there was a lot of City fans wanted Iheanacho to come through because they would like a young player. And, well, it didn't quite happen. And obviously they got Gabriel Jesus, who I think, to be fair, is probably a little bit better.
Mm. No injuries. He had 4 days out with a fractured finger in March of last year, Barry.
Oh, thank you.
Crawley 1, Colchester 3. Danny Bullman scored a cracker to open the scoring for Crawley. Colchester equalised within 30 seconds of the restart. It's Colchester's first League Cup quarter-final since 1974-75. What are your feelings about Colchester United, Barry, as a football club?
I can honestly say I have no feelings about them whatsoever. I could not name a single Colchester player. Off the top of my head, I cannot tell you the name of their ground. I'm not even sure where Colchester is. And I wish them all the very best in their first quarterfinal since 1970, whatever.
I'm offended. I used to play for them, Barry.
I'm really sorry.
Absolutely just killed me there, Barry.
But that is the truth.
That's fair. No, it's fair enough.
It's Colchester. There's an army barracks there, isn't
That's
it?
Right. Yeah.
Okay, I think I do know where it is.
Between London and Ipswich.
That's right.
The stadium is the Western Homes Community That's Stadium. Right. It is... I mean, the most soulless stadium.
It's, yeah. So they left Layer Road, right?
Yeah, they left Layer Road, which was fun. Yeah. It's very accessible. I mean, if you, after a game, you can stay till the end, walk out of the ground, get to McDonald's and get on the A12 within about 5 minutes and get home quickly. I'm trying to think who Colchester United's most legendary player is. Steve Whitten? Steve Whitten.
Hang on, I know this. They beat Leeds in the FA Cup in... 1970.
Okay.
And oh god, I can't remember the guy's name.
But also, they're doing really good things down there, especially in the youth development side. They've got a lot of good young talent who will be cherry picked soon, and the chairman's got a vision of trying to get a team full of academy players starting, and that's his vision for the team, and he's going about it the right way.
Yeah, I can't stress enough. I mean no disrespect to Colchester.
A bit late for that.
Purely my own ignorance.
Ray Crawford was the club legend. It was in 1971. He scored two goals for Colchester in a giant killing 3-2 victory against Leeds, the fifth round of the cup. It's one of those games that, you know, is the magic of the cup is replayed on TV, played on some sort of First World War trench of a pitch, long throws, getting it in the mixer.
Perfect.
Football as it should be played. And actually, Ray Crawford had played for England before that.
Anyway, good luck to Colchester. Oxford are through as well. They knocked your lot out, Barry, on penalties.
Yes, they did. I wasn't hugely surprised, to be honest, but Sunderland can concentrate on the league now.
Sunderland's goal was their only shot on target. Oxford manager Carl Robinson said, "We were poor today. That's probably the worst we've played." Robert Hall getting the goal for Oxford. Mark McNulty for Sunderland. Then McNulty had his penalty saved. So did Will Grigg as well. The draw took place on the Zoe Ball breakfast show on BBC Radio 2. Accompanying Zoe was Strictly Come Dancing's David James. So a step up from a checkout at Morrison's. So Villa, Liverpool, and great ties for Oxford and Colchester. Oxford United host Manchester City. Colchester go to Old Trafford to play Manchester United, and Everton play Leicester City. Let's talk about Derby County. Richard Keogh has been sacked by Derby after 7 years at the club for gross misconduct, a month after the car crash which left him seriously injured. He turned down an offer to stay at the club on massively reduced wages. He was on something like £24,000 a week. So he's been told that he is no longer employed at the club. Keogh is talking with his lawyers and the PFA about next steps. He has a right to appeal. Derby said in a statement, the club will not tolerate any of its players or staff behaving in a manner which puts themselves, their colleagues and members of the general public at risk of injury or worse, or which brings the club into disrepute. The club will be making no further comment at this time regards this matter until the conclusion of any potential appeal. It appears, Barry, that they tolerate it in some players and not others.
They appear to tolerate it in young players who have sell-on value, but not in 34-year-olds with injuries that are going to keep them sidelined till the end of their contract. I mean, unless there's more to the story than meets the eye, he seems to have been treated quite unfairly. What he did, we can probably all agree, was monumentally stupid. But before that, he was a good servant to Derby County. He started 316 of the 330 championship games they played up to this incident, and all 10 of their playoff games. You know, he has been a pretty loyal servant. I would imagine he would have a case for some sort of unfair dismissal or constructive dismissal, because he can point to the two lads who were actually convicted of a crime on the back of this drunken tomfoolery and say, well, if they haven't been sacked, why have I?
Presumably he will have talked to those advisors before turning down a pay cut. Because even if the pay cut's huge, if he's on 24 grand a week, even if they cut it by 20 grand, he's not going to get that offer from any other football club, is he? So he must be thinking he's going
to... And if he stayed, he would have his medical treatment paid for, which presumably, and his rehab, I would imagine he'll now have to pay for that himself.
I had a thought about this, which was... And I asked Marcus about this just before we came on, which is players aren't allowed to go skiing for the fact that they might injure themselves. And that seems to point to the fact that if you do something that do something stupid that causes you to get injured so that you can't perform what you're supposed to, then the club might consider it has the right to cut your wages or cut the contract. That what's odd about this is that neither of the two chaps that were driving were injured sufficiently to stop them playing, so that they can't really stop them, their contracts. They as stupid as they were, they got away with it.
Well, they couldn't stop their contract for that reason, but they could, if they say they will not tolerate any of its players or staff behaving in a manner which puts themselves, their colleagues and members of the general public at risk of injury or worse, or which brings the club into disrepute. I mean, that is literally drink driving. Yeah. You know,
That statement's kind of shot themselves in the foot, hasn't it?
Yeah. Yeah. Really. So that goes against perhaps my thought, but I wouldn't say he was unlucky. If you drunkenly get in the back of the car that someone that's clearly drunk, you're not unlucky, you're just stupid, right? So he's paid for his own stupidity in that regard, but they haven't.
Sure.
Yet.
I suppose I'm unsurprised that the ethical line drawn by a football club, and Derby County won't be the first or last, isn't a straight line.
Yeah.
You know, it kinks up and kinks down to suit them, right?
Yeah, exactly. It's a stark reminder that football's, whether we like it or not, is there's a business side and to it. And then they've completely, in my opinion, ignored the human side and almost thrown a player that's severely injured onto a bus. If it was his first incident, then I think he can feel very aggrieved by the decision.
Fitbar Corner, Barry. Full round of fixtures overnight. How'd it all go?
Yeah, well, it's as you were at the top of the table. Celtic and Rangers both won last night. Celtic beat St Mirren 2-0. Ross County entertained Rangers and were beaten 4-0. 2 for Ryan Jack, 2 for Alfredo Morelos, who has now got 18 already this season in all competitions. No red cards yet either. He's having a great season. Celtic are top of the table by just one goal. They've scored one goal more than Rangers, and both have conceded the same number, 7 each. I suppose the story is, and I think we had a question, didn't we?
Yes, Richard said, is there a bleaker footballing city than Edinburgh at the moment?
I can't think of one. We should probably, you know, soundtrack this section with Sunshine on Leith for some suitably sad music.
I suppose, given you don't know where Colchester is, there may be cities you've never even heard of.
Well,
or can't
indeed.
Place.
But the Knives are out for Craig Levein at Hearts. They lost 1-0 away at St Johnstone. And they're second from bottom of the table, only above St Mirren on goal difference, and the fans are getting very angry with Craig Levein, who has overseen one win in the league this season in 11 games. And he said he's worried. I'm not going to stand here and say I'm not, but he continues to insist that he is the man to turn things around, although the available evidence would suggest that he isn't. And then elsewhere in Edinburgh, Hibs were 2-0 down against Livingston at home and managed to scrape a point with a second-half rally. And if they hadn't, you'd imagine that would have been it for Paul Heckingbottom, who's under serious pressure there. Between them, Hearts and Hibs have played 22 league games this season and they've won one each. You know, Hearts should, going by budget, attendance, investment, they should be third. You know, that's their par. They're second from bottom of the table. Hibs aren't too far ahead of them. Now, coming up this weekend, it's quite interesting. The Betfred Cup, the Scottish League Cup, Hibs are playing Celtic and Rangers are playing Hearts. So you'd imagine if either of the Edinburgh sides get a good shellacking in those semi-finals, that the manager will probably lose their job.
You were saying just before the pod, you think it's probably about time that Hearts and Hibs joined forces and came together, weren't you?
No, I wasn't. I see, going by the looks of things, it wouldn't make much difference to them.
In Spain, both Barcelona and Real Madrid scored 5 in midweek. Barca beat Valladolid 5-1 to go top of the league. The next night, Real beat fellow Madrid side Leganes 5-0 with 5 different goal scorers to close the gap to just a point again. Granada could go to the top once more with a win at Getafe tonight. Atletico Madrid drew for the 5th time in 7 games as former Arsenal and West Ham striker Lucas Perez scored an absolutely brilliant equaliser. He sort of battered away about 10 players and then he bent the ball, but at immense power as well, just smacked it into the top left hand corner. Worth finding that one. Really, really, really lovely goal. In the women's game in Spain's top division, they will begin an indefinite strike on the weekend of the 16th, 17th of November. 189 representatives voted 93% in favour of taking action. They're backing a push for a collective bargaining agreement across the league, a minimum €16,000 annual wages for a full-time working week, maternity leave and paid time off. These demands are €7,000 lower than the average wage for Spanish workers. We'll keep you up to date with what's going on there. From Spain to Italy, and with news of a very late winner for Cristiano Ronaldo and the rest of Serie A, here's Nicky Bandini.
Well, it was quite a Wednesday night in Serie A, and I definitely didn't have to get up really early this morning to catch up on it all after taking part in a Football Weekly versus Science live show. So apologies if I sound a tiny bit tired. Juventus very nearly drew at home to Genoa. It was 1-1 until second half injury time when Ronaldo did one of those dives that sort of isn't a dive because he did take a tap on the shin first, but also the way that he fell really seemed to have no correspondence to the way that tap had happened. It was a foul. He did score the penalty. Juventus won 2-1. They weren't good. They also benefited from a really generous red card to Casata in that game. So, yes, not the most compelling performance, but enough to get them back top of the league after Inter had moved ahead of them with a win over Brescia the night before. Inter also not very good, by the way, but a very nice goal from Romelu Lukaku to get them across the line in that one. Napoli lost ground again in this title race. They drew 2-2 at home to Atalanta in a game, and you'll like this, which was marred by some contention around VAR. Napoli winning 2-1 with about 5 minutes left to go. Fernando Llorente gets absolutely mauled by Simon Kjær in the box. Looks very much like a penalty, but doesn't get given. Atalanta go up the other end and score, and everyone inside the stadium is basically waiting for VAR to call this back and award the penalty because everyone's seen it so clearly. But it doesn't happen, no pitch side review even. And then, of course, all hell breaks loose. And even Carlo Ancelotti manages to talk himself into a red card, which is not something you see all that often. So, frustrating night for Napoli. The other game I really want to tell you about was Roma winning 4-0 against Udinese. Not for the game itself, but for the fact that Chris Smalling has scored his first goal in Serie A. The goal itself, nothing special. In fact, it was not even the best goal scored by a centre-back playing for a team from Rome last night, because Francesco Acerbi scored a cracker for Lazio. But it was his first in Italy, and I guess just an opportunity to talk about how well he's doing. He's integrated really quickly at Roma. He's very much a fixed part of that starting 11 already, and getting rave reviews across the board. He really suits the way Paolo Fonseca is playing football, with a high defensive line that needs the centre-backs to have the pace to track back and cover that extra ground. He's doing brilliantly, and I suppose if you tie that together with Lukaku, you could say two former United players, or perhaps one and a half, since Smalling is still under contract at United, both having very good nights in Serie A.
Thank you, Nicky. To Australia and the A-League, Perth Glory have made an approach to Mino Raiola for Zlatan Ibrahimovic as his contract expires at the end of the year. Zlatan on his Instagram dropped a hint he'll be moving to Spain when his contract runs out. Didn't necessarily he was going to play in Spain, but he might just move to Marbella. His current club, LA Galaxy, lost 5-3 to LAFC in the conference semi-final last week, who then lost 3-1 to the Seattle Sounders in the conference final this week. The Sounders have made their third MLS Cup final in 4 years. We'll play Toronto after Toronto beat last year's winners Atlanta 2-1 on Wednesday night. The Sounders were playing in a green kit. You know, I have a problem with green kits. But literally, it was the colour of the pitch. There was, frankly, they should be thrown out of the whole competition for that. It's their home kit, says producer Jonathan. I don't care what it is. It looks like a football pitch. You're on a football pitch. There are lots of other colours, at least a different shade. You know, go Plymouth green, at least. It looks slightly different to the grass. But my love to Seattle. It's quite a fun place. Pretty hipster. Get some good coffee. First ever Starbucks.
Grunge.
Yeah, grunge as well.
Grunge, coffee, heroin. It's got it all.
And fish.
Yeah.
Grunge, coffee, heroin and fish, which will be your autobiography, John.
That's actually already the title.
The working title
yeah.
for the brewing years. Right, that'll do for part two. We'll begin part three with UEFA's fine for Bulgaria. Welcome to part three of the Guardian Football Weekly Extra. So UEFA have given their judgment on the Bulgaria-England game 2 weeks ago. Bulgaria have been ordered to play their next competitive home match behind closed doors, with a further match suspended for 2 years, as well as a €75,000 fine, which is about £64,000. Their game against the Czech Republic on the 17th of November will be played behind closed doors. And they've been ordered to display a banner with words "No to Racism" next to the UEFA logo. So that will show them. It's almost exactly what we predicted by our panel 2 weeks ago. And Barry, it is woefully inadequate again. I don't know why I was surprised. I was surprised. I thought maybe it would be a watershed moment, but maybe I was just being hopeful.
What exactly were you expecting?
Do you know what? I don't know. Maybe because I talked about it so much, and maybe because we did that show when we talked about possible sanctions, possible punishments, you know, banning them from the next competitive thing, which is the Nations League, or perhaps making them play all their games away from home. I just talked about it a lot, so I'd created a bubble for myself. But
yeah, I mean, right, if we look at the punishment, they've been fined €75,000. That seems reasonably hefty by the standards of UEFA fines for this kind of thing. They have to play a game behind closed doors. That's going to constitute quite a financial hit as well, you'd imagine, for a national association that doesn't have much money. And I've seen people, they also get the accompanying bad publicity to go on top of the bad publicity they've already got for this, the racist behaviour of the fans. And I've seen people trot out the usual lazy comparisons with the fine Nicholas Bentner got that time he wore the branded boxers for a bookmaker stunt. He was fined £80,000 at the time, but that didn't affect him or hurt him financially, because that's the exact amount he was paid to wear them. And I would hazard a guess that they might have paid the fine as well as paying him, but because they would probably have expected him to be fined for pulling that stunt. So it's not, you're likening apples to oranges there. I don't think the punishment for Bulgaria received is sufficient, but it is a punishment, and you know, here in England, we had the Haringey Borough Yeovil FA Cup tie was replayed the other night. Was that behind closed doors? Were Yeovil punished for that? Have they been punished for that yet? I'm not sure.
Mm. I mean, so that was at Haringey, so I guess would you ban Yeovil players for that, or I mean, fans from that game, or should that game have even happened? Is the question, you know, because the point you're making that David Conn made in the paper the other day was our punishments are not strong either. You know, Millwall fans were found guilty of racist chanting, and there was a £10,000 fine.
Mm. I think the Yeovil one, I think it was. What was it? One individual, maybe, or two? I'm not too sure how many.
Two were arrested. One was charged.
Yeah, so I think me being a black player, I think it's when you've got whole sections of a crowd being racist, I think it's a little bit different to one or two. Don't get me wrong, we want to stamp out all racism in the game, but when it's whole sections and it is that affects players completely different to one or twos. But I just wanted to see a bit of an escalation in things. We've seen this sort of punishment before. For countries, it hasn't worked. It's not going to work again, and we need an escalation. Whether that be a points deduction, or the threat of kicking them out of the tournament might have been enough. Maybe that was the suspended part of that punishment should have been. If it happens again, there's a chance you might be kicked out of the tournament. We need to see an escalation now. It's not good enough.
And it wasn't the first. Look, you know, part of that stadium was closed during that game. You know, they've had kind of punishment.
Yeah, I agree completely with Barry, though, with regards to the financial implications. I think they are severe for an FA the size of Bulgaria. If you're losing out on, you know, potentially, was it 400,000-500,000 worth of gate receipts, and you're getting fined for 65 grand, that's a lot of money for a country like Bulgaria.
We can't get into the minds of, say, Tyrone Mings or Raheem Sterling, but do you think now they'll look at that punishment and think, we should have walked off? That's the only thing that will actually make, because then UEFA have a decision to make.
Yeah, I completely agree. I think now we have to put them in that uncomfortable position where they've got back one or the other, and it's going to take some strong players and in history, without people being, without activism, things don't change. You know, and I think it's come to that point where, unless that happens, I don't think UEFA or FIFA are going to do anything about it.
And UEFA have, you know, they have provisions, you know, they open a book and they go, right, what is the process? It's, but the process, to me, do not look fit for purpose. And it's also who's on that independent panel, right? How many, you know, there is a problem in lots of parts of society where, you know, you get to the top and it's all middle-aged old white men that can't empathise with that situation.
Well, I was reading something the other day, and it was that of incidents this year, there's been, I say, 15, 16, and only two of them were in clubs in Western Europe. One of them was Lazio, the other one was Rangers, and the rest were clubs or countries in Eastern Europe. And, you know, going back to Barry's point about the fine, and the one Marcus made, is that these clubs, these entities, don't have much money to take from them. I think if you worked it out on a proportional scale, the fine that Bulgaria received plus the gate receipts that they'd lose to the FA, if they did it unproportionately, it'd be several million. It would, you know, involve the closing of Wembley and the revenue from that, plus a fine of, say, 500,000, £1 million. But I just, I don't understand what, other than kicking teams out of competitions for these incidents, I don't think the fines represent anything. Because I'm sure that whoever runs the Bulgarian FA can find that money down the back of the sofa quite easily.
The fine doesn't hit the fans.
No, and you've got to stop the fans. It's got to be a deterrent. It seems to be, you can argue about the fines all you like, but it's actually the whole point is stopping racism.
QPR have released a statement claiming that they've not yet received a direct response from either UEFA, FIFA or the Andalusian Football Federation after their under-18s walked off the pitch during a pre-season game in Seville in August. CEO Lee Hughes said, "He is disgusted, embarrassed and dismayed to call them our governing bodies when they are incapable of governing." He alleged UEFA told QPR the incident fell outside their jurisdiction, so they passed it on to FIFA, who took 7 weeks to then pass it back to UEFA. I mean, if it wasn't so serious, it'd be funny, right? Who haven't come back to QPR yet. He finished the statement by saying, "Yet again, FIFA and UEFA have failed to deal with the issue, and they haven't just failed the players subjected to racist abuse. They failed every BAME fan who wants to go and enjoy football. There was also a story on CNN by Darren Lewis, Matthias Grez and Zain Nabi about a player who was racially abused in last season's Saturday Vars final in Leicestershire. Linford Harris was playing for FC Wimswold against Cosby United. As he was waiting to take a penalty, he heard racist abuse from two different fans. He later got sent off, which eventually sparked a mass brawl. He was fined £90 and given a six-match ban. One of the fans was identified but has escaped punishment. The panel said that Cosby United showed no insight or remorse for the racist behaviour of the fan and even denied that he was a Cosby fan, despite the fact he lives in Cosby, is a local businessman. Cosby United is his local team and his son plays for a Cosby United-affiliated youth team. So it is a problem for all levels of football and in many parts of British society, but it's sort of that level of denial.
I think as players, we accept that there's Neanderthals in the public who are brainless and going to do things. But what we want is that clubs deal with it fast and efficiently, and that's what we ask. Obviously, we want to get to a point when there's none, but at the very least, FAs, FIFA, UEFA, clubs, let's just deal with it as quickly as possible, and these people brought to justice. That's the minimum requirement.
Linford Harris, by the way, has since retired from football, saying he didn't just want to go through it again. It's not so much the football side, but if I go through that again, it'll ruin me, he said. So, as we've said before, like, we will cover everything that happens and every racist incident, and sometimes we will go into detail, and we'll do more specials on it in the future. The Premier League is back this weekend. Early kickoff on Saturday sees Manchester United go to Bournemouth. Do you reckon, John, the Ollie revolution, as has happened in the last three games, will keep on trucking?
Well, I do expect to win down there, possibly because Bournemouth play an attacking game, which plays in United's hands. One thing I didn't mention before we were talking about that game is the ever-growing legend of Scott McTominay.
Yeah.
In amidst Manchester United's crisis, if you want to call it that, he's really become a key player. Now, Paul Pogba is out till December. Someone told me that they saw Paul Pogba at Old Trafford the other day. I think it was a Liverpool game. And he had a walking cane, which I think is quite stylish.
Like Snoop Dogg?
Yeah.
Did Snoop Dogg have a walking cane?
I don't know.
Marcus, did Snoop Dogg have a walking cane?
He used to call it a pimp cane, didn't he?
A pimp cane. Okay. Yeah. Okay. Either way. A cane of some sort.
I once saw someone from Soul Solid Crew with a pimp cane.
Oh, yeah, he did, yeah.
Oh, okay. Yeah. So it may have been it might have been style, it might have been substance.
Well, I think
substance.
He's got an
it may
ankle
have been
injury,
both.
But, you know, you may as well accessorise your injury. So,
I mean, if you're Paul Pogba, a cane is more fitting than a Zimmer frame, isn't it?
Yeah, So anyway, he's but Scott McTominay, in the absence of Paul Pogba, and let's call this, Paul Pogba isn't, as far as I'm concerned, he probably is, you can veer into the point of being an ex-Manchester United player. Scott McTominay has really grown, and actually Ole Gunnar Solskjaer the other day said, we don't need Pogba because we've got Fred, which I'm not quite sure I agree with at this point, but at least I've got Scott McTominay.
Didn't the, when they flashed up the teams yesterday, next to Fred, it said Phil Fred. Which sounds like such a great... I'd love to see Phil Fred.
Is that a combination of Phil Jones
and Fred?
Fred,
yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. Who would you like to see wearing the armband at the Emirates as Arsenal take on Wolves on Saturday, Barry?
I don't really care who wears the armband, but I have a feeling if Arsenal lose this game, the Emirates will not be a happy place. There could be absolute uproar in the stands if they don't win, and I suspect there's quite a good chance they won't win.
It'd be interesting to see what the reaction, if Granit Xhaka, who I believe at time of going to print, has not apologised.
No.
What the reaction to Xhaka will be if he plays, if he captains, if he...
Do you remember the Boué thing?
Yeah.
Which was 12 or 13 years ago. And my recollection of that is that Arsenal fans booed him off. And then they eventually, Boué became a cult hero. Mm. The Arsenal fans went back on themselves and felt sorry for what they'd done because Boué was quite a decent bloke, and Granit Xhaka probably needs to show that side of himself, maybe a little bit of humility on that side of it. I don't know.
Well, we shall see. But interesting to see what happens. Villa play Liverpool. Brighton play Norwich. City play Southampton. Want a score prediction? How many will Southampton concede on Saturday? Marcus?
It's interesting. When teams... Well, when I've been in teams and we've got beat heavily, all we do for the next week is just defensive shape. So it's normally the next game you're a little bit better prepared. So... they're going to lose, but I don't think it's going to be a cricket score.
What was your worst ever defeat?
I think it was like a 5-1 or something.
Oh, you've got off lightly, haven't you? And was it raining? That just made it worse, the horizontal rain in the face. Every bit of that. Sheffield United, Burnley, West Ham, Newcastle. The late kickoff is Watford versus Chelsea. And on Sunday, Crystal Palace play Leicester at 2, and then Everton Spurs at 4:30. And you were right, you were saying earlier, Everton Spurs is a clash of, it's a crisis clash. Whoever loses that will sound the klaxon pretty loudly, won't they?
Yeah, it's an interesting game. I mean, it's not a stellar Super Sunday lineup, but two quite intriguing games nonetheless, Palace Leicester and Everton Tottenham. Quite difficult to call either, you have to say. Probably Leicester should beat Palace, but Everton Tottenham, I have no idea.
But Marcus, here's a question. When you've, what's the biggest win you're involved in?
5-1, I think.
Yeah, and how did the next game go?
We won again. Yeah, okay, yeah. Yeah. I think once you get a win like that, it definitely galvanises you.
Yeah.
Yeah, I expect Leicester to win that one.
But you don't, I mean, like that 9-0. I mean, they were just flying. I mean, they were allowed to fly. Let's put it that way.
See, I think when I'm watching that, and I think I may have said this before, I'm looking at that going, that is 8 goals you've wasted.
Yeah.
Because they're 8 goals you could use up to get extra points through the season. You know, just add one onto a 1-1 and you got 3 points.
So it's like Noel Gallagher chucking away good songs on a B-side, that type of thing.
Yeah, half the world away. What are you doing, mate?
Yeah.
Come on. Simon says, what is Marcus Bean's favourite type of bean?
Baked beans.
Okay. Heinz?
Yeah, Heinz is my...
Okay. And how often would you partake in a Heinz bean?
I eat them quite regularly, actually, yeah.
Every day?
Every other day.
Every other day?
Wow. Yeah.
On toast or...?
Toast with a fried egg, normally, sat next to it.
Okay.
Yeah.
That's marvellous. Oh, very... Who knew?
I would need something between the beans and the egg... to a buffer, a break.
Yeah, no, I don't mind bean touching.
I need a sausage or...
No, I don't mind that. So it's sort of 132 portions of beans a year
for Marcus Bean, give or take, yeah.
Well, I'm delighted about that. Anyway, that'll do for today. Barry, thank you so much for your time.
You're very welcome.
Thank you, John.
Cheers, Max.
Thank you, Marcus.
Cheers, mate.
I'm away for 4 podcasts. Hosting on Monday will be Faye Carruthers.
For more great podcasts from The Guardian, just go to theguardian.com/podcasts.